And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is a new year, a new way of seeing things. My first guest is one of the country's leading leadership trainers. He explained the science of extraordinary achievement and gave us the secret of getting from where we are to where we want to be through hard goals. My next guest is one of the country's top financial reporters. She's the anchor of CNBC's Street Signs and the co-anchor of Squawk on the Street. We're going to go behind the burqa to learn about her reporting in the Middle East. And if you want to join in the conversation, or if you just want to speak to Aaron Burnett, you can always call us at 639-0008. Aaron Burnett, as I said, anchors CNBC's Street Sign and co-anchors CNBC's Squawk on the Street with Mark Haynes. She also appears regularly on NBC's Today Show, Meet the Press, and she's a contributor to MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough. Aaron is focused on global business reporting. Aaron has hosted her live shows from five different continents and all of the BRIC countries. And in case you don't know what the acronym BRIC stands for, it's Brazil, Russia, India, and China. She's also filed special reports from Iraq, Libya, Egypt, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Aaron is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and in 2009, she was selected as one of Fortune's top 40 under 40 years old. She attended Williams College. There, she studied political science and economics, graduating with a Bachelor in Arts in Political Economy. As an undergraduate, she also played lacrosse and field hockey, so you don't want to mess with her. Aaron, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I am doing well, and thank you for such a kind introduction. Nice to talk to you, Billy.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. So let's start with something that's topical, shall we? The top news story of the day, Goldman Sachs, which is, by the way, your alma mater, and some undisclosed Russian investor are pumping $500 million into Facebook. That places the market valuation of Facebook in excess of $50 billion. So help us have some perspective on this. Boeing, which is an old-school industrial company, has a market capitalization of only $48.7 billion. Is Facebook really worth it?
That is the key question. And, you know, it's amazing when you look at it, Billy. If you look at the employee count, Facebook has 2,000 employees, almost all of them out in California. Boeing has 159,000 employees, and more than 90% of them are in the United States. So Boeing employs a whole lot more people than Facebook. And also in terms of what it makes, 75% of the world's planes, you know, currently in service in the commercial fleet around the world are Boeing planes. Boeing is America's biggest exporter. So it's very clear that Boeing makes something that provides a whole lot of value to the United States. Facebook doesn't make anything, but yet it is transforming the way a lot of people relate to each other and see each other around the world with 500 million users. So I don't know how you really judge one versus the other, but it is pretty incredible to think that you could have a company like Facebook worth more than Boeing. It surprises me, but you know, we have analysts on today saying, look, Facebook's worth even more than that. It should be worth $60 billion or $70 billion. So I don't know the answer to that question, but if you think about it, as you said, from 30,000 feet, to use an airline pun, it does seem a bit strange.
Well, I've got a single word to ask you, and that is bubble. Is this just another bubble that we're seeing in the dot-com era, similar to the dot-com era that we saw in 2000?
I mean, it might be. I mean, especially because you think about what Facebook does, it's not technologically that difficult, right? It survives by virtue of more and more people being on it, if it's a social network. So it would seem that someone else could come in and take that market. So far, no one has. But, you know, it could be a bubble. But it's interesting, you look around at companies like Google that have really transformed the way that we live our lives and relate to information every single day. And there is a real value in that. Or even a company like Apple, they make things, but Apple's now the second most valuable company in America.
That's right.
So I don't know if it's a bubble. There's certainly value there, whether it's gotten ahead of itself, maybe, but bubble may be a little bit too strong of a word at this point.
Well, it's an interesting topic, and it's something that you're going to explore today on Street Signs. What time is that segment going to be on for my listeners who can leave Brainstorming with Billy the Brain and go right to CNBC?
All right, and then they can come back to you, but it's going to be at around 11:15 your time.
11:15 out here.
When we're going to do the segment, yes.
Beautiful stuff. All right, let's get back to the real reason that I had you on the show, and that is your total international perspective. You are by far the most internationally savvy of all the CNBC anchors there. You've reported from five continents, as I said in the intro there. So let's talk about the world economy. How do you see the world economy here at the start of the year 2011?
It is it's better than it was a year ago. Let's put it that way. And the emerging markets, you know, places like India and China have really been powering the global economic recovery. There's absolutely no question about that. Right now, the big hope is that they keep growing, but sort of like Goldilocks. We don't want it to be too hot, so that they end up having to raise interest rates and end up having things get too cold and growth slow down dramatically there. So I'd say we're in a much better position than we were a year ago, and that's really good for the United States. It's amazing when you think about it, Billy. You know, 85 to 90% of the growth from this point on is going to come from countries outside the United States. Even though we're still the world's biggest economy, we're still the world's largest manufacturer, what happens in all of these other countries that seem sort of far away is really central to our companies every single day. Even a company like Boeing, it's its biggest exporter in America. Half of Boeing's business comes from outside the U.S.
Right.
So it matters what happens in India or Vietnam to our financial markets here.
Without a doubt, Aaron, and then well said on that as well. I think The Economist did a very interesting article on that where they basically divided the globe into three segments. There's the U.S. economy, there's the Euro economy, and the rest of the emerging markets. So my question to you is this. If you were advising somebody who is graduating from Williams College this year that wants to get into business, where in the world would you tell them to go to start their business career?
This is a tough question. I do think, and a lot of executives, I've asked this question of them, and they all come up with a similar answer, which is you need to get out and about, out of your comfort zone. And that doesn't necessarily mean leaving the United States, although I would say when you're young and you don't have a lot to lose and you don't mind staying in roach hotels wherever you might be, it's a good time to get out and to see the rest of the world. It's great to have facility with another language. You know, I know a lot of young kids graduating from school now want to go to Shanghai because it's got that buzz and vibe, and believe me, you feel it when you're there. Mm. But I would say, you know, getting outside the U.S. for a year in any capacity is probably a really great thing for anybody graduating. And certainly in business, you're going to be able to parlay it into a big career. You know, we did a piece earlier this year on Mormons. And, you know, the Mormon kids, they go overseas for 2 years, and a lot of them have been going places like Brazil. And now you look at the biggest companies in Brazil, the fastest-growing new companies, American kids who had done their Mormon missions overseas, and they speak Portuguese. Speaking Portuguese is the hugest advantage you can have in a market like Brazil, which is now one of the hottest places in the world to be.
That's right. We're talking to Aaron Burnett. She's CNBC's anchor for Street Signs, and she's the co-anchor for Squawk on the Street. And one of the other interesting things about your career, Aaron, is not only are you international, have that international perspective, but you've reported from several Muslim countries, Libya, Iraq, Egypt, Dubai. In fact, you've donned the burqa out of respect for the culture and been a woman in these dominant male cultures that are out there. So let's go behind that just a little bit. What's it like being a woman reporting from these predominantly male countries that have such a unique way of doing business?
You know, that is an amazing question. And I have, over the past 5 years, going back and forth there a lot, I get a more nuanced feeling for that. First of all, I've never felt uncomfortable being a woman, certainly not in a business scenario in the Middle East at all. But one of the most interesting sets of pieces we did was actually this year I went to Saudi Arabia and to Dubai and profiled young women, somewhere, all of them between sort of 20 and 32, about their lives and their business and what they were doing in business. And it was a real eye-opener for me, especially, you know, hearing these women talk about some of them running, you know, mergers and acquisitions and doing a lot of work for some of these sovereign wealth funds in the Middle East, which, as you know, are investing in a lot of big U.S. companies.
Yes.
These women are superstars. A lot of them were the first women in their department, articulate in all of the things that you would expect. But because they wear what they call a shayla around their head, you sort of think they're going to be quiet or shy or reserved, but they're not. And I have had a lot of frank conversations with them about why they wear that and how they see it. And it's really opened my eyes to the fact that many of them do not perceive necessarily wearing that to be something that's demeaning. And obviously, that's different than having your face completely covered. I mean, there's different gradations. But it's been a real eye-opener for me because these women, Billy, are every one of them getting degrees in business, math, engineering, all of those things that we say we want Americans to do more of. And they're doing it there and pursuing careers. So we'll see if that'll end up, you know, creating a broader societal change there. But certainly women are rising in a way that a lot of people might not expect.
I think it's interesting, Erin Burnett, that you interviewed women from 20 to 32 years old, which is a very interesting segment for looking forward at what effect this is going to have on their society. My question would be, what about the woman who's 40 to 45 years old, who their culture has sort of made them become the housewife or certainly made them into a subservient role? Do you see them really asserting themselves in that sort of a culture?
Listen, that's interesting, and the answer is yes and no. Yes, in that you do see some women, for example, one of the chief finance ministers in the United Arab Emirates, which is our key ally in the Middle East and has 10% of the world's oil, is a woman, and she's been very successful. So there are examples of that in a lot of these different countries, and you might criticize and say, okay, maybe they're just tokens and it's not as broad-based, and you'd be accurate in saying that. But of the other women in that age, I think a lot of them are more pushing their daughters to be a part of the working world and the working environment. We were in a house in Saudi Arabia, though, with a family that had three daughters, all of whom work, and the mothers and the daughters had started a magazine together. So they were. I was talking to them about their being an entrepreneur, and the father was nowhere to be seen. And then at the end of the interview, I said, well, you know, we're going to be showing this on the Today Show, and Americans are going to see this, and they're going to, you're talking about being a woman, can we talk to your husband? So she says, okay, so he comes in, they go get him, he comes in, and he made a joke about how every time they're going to do something in the family, they take a vote, and he loses every time because it's 4-1. And it made me laugh because it was sort of a moment I could connect to. I'm one of three daughters, and I realized that sort of behind the walls, things aren't always as different as they seem. Now, you know, that being said, as you know, there are a lot of serious issues with women in some of these countries, so we can't make light of that. But in some senses, it's not as foreign as it may seem, even though they wear the veil. They do have, in a lot of instances, a lot of power in certain spheres.
We're talking to Erin Burnett of CNBC, everybody. And Erin, I'm going to switch gears on you a little bit, but stick with the Middle East, because I am fascinated by Dubai. And that's an area of the world that you have reported on. It's very misunderstood, I think, in the United States. At one time, it was the darling of the business world. Even Halliburton moved its world headquarters there. Kind of pull back the curtain and reveal a little bit to my listeners about Dubai. Why was it the shining star and the crown of the Middle East economy for such a long time?
Dubai is, you know, it's amazing. 30 years ago, it was a pearl fishing village, and they have built it up literally from that into one of the fanciest cities in the world, I guess, with the way I would say it. I would say it is similar to Las Vegas meeting New York meeting Singapore, and it is the center of business in the Middle East. So Dubai is a huge tourist destination for Europeans and Russians. So when you go there, that's who's there on vacation, and everything is packed, and they're all there having a good time. It's not so much for Americans, obviously, so that's why it's sometimes a little more difficult for us to understand what a tourist draw is. You know, they don't have a Caribbean in Europe, right? Mediterranean's cold in the winter. So when they want a warm getaway, they go there. So you've got those tourists. And then in terms of business, you have the Middle East, which is the fastest growing young population in the world. And companies want exposure there. And Dubai, really, I mean, you could take east off the word middle. If you look at it from a flight pattern, all these business executives going from the U.S. to China and Russia, Dubai's in the center of it. So it's very close to, you know, they have their airport passenger numbers were growing at double digits even throughout the crisis.
Wow.
So it is a convenient place. So all that being said, I think Dubai has a real reason for existence and a real reason to be there, and it is by leaps and bounds ahead of other cities that would like to compete with it. But it had a bubble, it had a real estate bubble, and they got to work through that. You can't pretend that didn't happen. But I do think there's a real reason for that city to exist and to thrive.
Okay. And so you've answered one of my follow-on questions was, is the wealth in Dubai diminished during the recession? And that was part
of the bubble. Well, it's hugely diminished. I mean, you know, the shake there, I mean, I'm pulling the numbers out of my head, so I may be wrong here, but I believe at the peak he was worth $24 billion, and now he's worth something like $6 billion. So, you know,
poor
relatively,
man. He's suffering.
He's poor, but absolutely, he's still rich, right?
Right, without a doubt. But an interesting subpart of the culture over there is this class structure in Dubai, because immigrants are the ones who are doing most of the work for the residents there. Did you see a real caste system or any sort of cultural structure in Dubai?
Yes, 85% of the people who live there are not from there. And that is, most of them are Pakistani and Southeast Asian. They're doing all the construction. And then in terms of banking and finance, obviously, because it's a hub for all of that, you've got a lot of expats, highly educated expats there as well. So you see that in Dubai. You see that in a lot of countries in the Middle East. And I think, Billy, it leads to one crucial thing that has to happen in that region economically, but also I think socially, which is they have got to find a way to have all the people in their population working, aspiring, and moving up in a meritocracy.
In other words,
because
they need a middle class.
They've been able to kind of rest on the oil money, right? The oil money will go to you whether you work or don't work. So
right.
It's sort of encouraged a little bit of a malaise economically that they have to fight through.
So there's no real middle class in any of the Middle East, or at least in Dubai, that you can see forming?
It is forming. I mean, you know, in Saudi Arabia, for example, they're educating women. Three-quarters of the graduates from, or even more from graduate school, which counts accounting degrees, are women.
Wow.
And a lot of those women are going to become, you know, part of that new middle class. But right now they have to find jobs for all of them, because it used to be in Saudi Arabia, a woman couldn't work in the same room as a man. So there's Indian companies, you know, those call centers and engineering companies.
Right.
They're getting special approval from the Saudi government to open up call centers in Saudi Arabia where women can men can oversee women. So they're taking those baby steps to get all of these people economically active, and that's where this middle class will come from. But it's still rather nascent.
All right, great. We're talking to Aaron Burnett, everybody, co-anchor of Squawk on the Street and anchor of Street Signs for CNBC. And Aaron, by far, you're the most versatile anchor on CNBC. I mean, you work with some of the more interesting characters, and I use that word very seriously, in the CNBC Firmament of Stars there. Most notably, you work in the mornings with Mark Haynes, and then on Street Signs, you work with Jim Cramer. So I'm curious about you as a person. I mean, you're dealing with all of these divergent personalities there. It must take a very special temperament to work with so many different personalities. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you really mold yourself to the different people that come on the stage there.
Well, you put it nicely. It's just, I think of it, I guess it's sort of like I talk about it like it's like a different set of muscles. You know, when you do a lot of push-ups, your arms get strong.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you actually go do something with your legs, and all of a sudden your legs are really sore. So dealing with people like Mark and Jim, their personalities are so different. I think of it like a different set of muscles. And it's fun because, you know, you kind of use one set for a while, and then you get to use another set. And the main thing I think about is just trying to make the people feel comfortable.
Oh, that's...
The viewers feel comfortable, and the person you're sitting next to feel comfortable just being themselves.
Well, that's very well said, and you certainly do that. Now, if people want to learn more about you, Aaron, because they hear the sound of your voice, they like what they're hearing, where would you direct them to go to learn more about you or to see you on TV?
Well, I guess CNBC would be the place to go, and our website, cnbc.com, where we have a lot of our international special reports.
That's great. We've been talking to Aaron Burnett, everybody. She's CNBC's anchor for Street Signs and the co-anchor for Squawk on the Street. Aaron, it is always a delight to speak with you. Thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Billy. Loved it.
Take care. Talk to you soon now.
All right. Take care.